Welcome to the Unconquered Podcast.
At Florida State, we won national championships and ACC championships.
Back to some basics, consistency in what we're doing. Guys getting a little banged and bruised, working a bunch of different situations, making progress.
You have to have success, so you know something I can really do this.
Jason Staples here on the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio, brought to you by Luis Marquez of Keller Williams Realty in Jacksonville, Florida. Once again, if you need any real estate work done in the greater Jacksonville area, give Luis a call, support the podcast, let him know that you heard about him from the podcast, and help us out a lot. I'm going to do a short Louisville post-Louisville reflection a little bit later than I'd like. And also some question and answer and some bigger picture stuff here. A little late on the Louisville reflection. To be honest, I've been working on my own scheming and preparation for a game in which my high school team is going to be we're basically playing for the conference title this next week or on Friday, and it's going to be a difficult one for us, and especially since we may have some disciplinary stuff with our best player. But beyond that, it's also an especially difficult assignment for me, since I'm working as the special teams coordinator, and they have Jordan Adams, the 5-star wide receiver, who is leading the state in punt returns, returned 3 for touchdowns in 1 game earlier this year, and also kick returns, and also works as their punter, meaning that they're always a threat to fake a punt. So this has been a fun week in that regard, trying to get those guys ready for a game that is the first game of its type that this program, that this school that I just moved over to this year has had in over a decade. So we're happy to be there, but we want to actually win the game. So we'll see how that all goes. But plenty of special teams work to do on that. In any case, let's get to talking about the Louisville game. And I don't want to talk about this all that much, quite frankly. There's not a whole lot more to say than a lot of the stuff I've already said. But, you know, here's the reality is that this was a bad loss. And largely because up to now, Florida State's first 3 losses were to an Alabama team that is number 1 in the country. And Florida State played them closer and better than anyone has by a mile. And then to 2 very good teams with 1 loss in between them, North Carolina State and Miami. So Florida State's losses up to now had been to really high quality teams and were good losses if there is such a thing. This Louisville team, this isn't a good team. That Louisville team is not a very good team. And they're not a very good team. They're a good team, but they're not a very good team. That's not a very good team. And that's not a good defense. And so this is the first really bad loss Florida State's had. They should have won all 3 of the other non-Alabama losses. Jimbo Fisher's right when he says, "Oh well, you know, we've been in position to win the games. You know, we're just inches away." He is right, as infuriating as it is to hear. He's right. But the reality is Florida State shouldn't be in this close of a game against this Louisville team. That's just the reality. So yeah, I mean, they should have won the game, but they also should have lost. They should have been blown out in this game. They got a break by that Flanagan crew on the roughing and passer call. Which would have been nice to have a couple of those when, on comparable hits by Bradley Chubb in the NC State game. They got that call that gave them another shot at a touchdown where they scored. They shouldn't have gotten that. So this game they deserve to lose this game. Bottom line. Now they deserve to win the North Carolina State and Miami games in my view. They outplayed both of those teams and lost. So this would have gotten things closer to even, but instead they're yet one more loss behind. But the reality is Florida State had no business scoring 21 points offensively against that Louisville defense. I mean, again, that's the same Louisville defense that Boston College scored 45 on 2 weeks ago in Louisville. That's not getting it done, folks. You can't afford to give up the. I mean, you're going to give up points against Lamar Jackson. You know they're going to score some points. That's quality offense, probably the best offense Florida State's played. But you can't score 21 offensive points against that defense. You can't do it. And yeah, I mean, 6.1 yards per play, generally pretty good. That's decent. But against that Louisville defense, Boston College put up 6.38. NC State put up 7.32. Clemson put up 7.57. North Carolina put up 6.57. That's before some of the injuries kicked in for Carolina, but still. It's a bad offensive performance by Florida State. And, you know, again, I will reiterate, Fisher's right that Florida State's inches away. Florida State is one play in each of their losses away from being 5-1. Problem is, they're also one play plus, say, a two-point conversion. So you could argue three or four plays. But either way, they're, say, three plays away from 0-6. Those are ridiculous margins. Now, granted, I've been saying for years that people don't understand how tight the margins are in college football. One or two details, you make one block early in a game that leads to an 80-yard play, or you don't stumble, or you don't throw one interception, or something happens, you know, one little thing. You know, maybe you run fit just off and you don't get a third down stop, or you attack the running back instead of the all-world Heisman Trophy winning quarterback on a read play, and you give him a wide open field to run. One or two little details can be the difference between winning by 30 and losing. I mean, that's how this game works. I mean, I see it firsthand all the time as a coach. It's like, man, all we needed to do is catch that ball, and this game's totally different. Now we're down 14. Or, wow, it's a good thing we scored there, because now we're up 36 and we're not that much better than this team. I mean, that happens. Or we are better, but we're not playing better because we missed two techniques here and that cost us two touchdowns and, you know, now we're playing from behind, whatever. It changes things. But the reality is Florida State, given Florida State's talent level, given the health of the defense, given all sorts of other things, there's just no excuse to play this close. There's no excuse. And granted, you do have one excuse that's built in terms of you're playing a true freshman quarterback and all that. And yeah. I got it. And, you know, Blackman, there were a couple big mistakes in this game, most notably pulling the ball on a run play at the end there where, you know, word is that he wasn't, that was just a called run and he decided to try to pull it. And that explains why Akers locked down on it. So, yeah, that happens sometimes when you got an 18-year-old. You know, it gets worse, by the way, in the high school level sometimes. But there's just no reason. There's no reason to do that. And again, you shouldn't be in that position where you're depending on a late drive to go ahead there. But here's the thing. And I tweeted this out right after that game. Great teams with great culture find ways to win. And they win on the margins. Teams with bad culture, teams that aren't fully together or, you know, aren't focused on detail, teams that aren't getting the culture thing right, they find ways to lose. And this Florida State team has invented ways to lose over the last few weeks. I mean, after they got that fourth down stop, which, by the way, was the right call, even though Jimbo Fisher and his coaches show said otherwise, it was a right call by Bobby Petrino. And it's unfortunate to hear Fisher talk about how that, you know, he should have just gone for the field goal. That would have been the wrong call for Petrino. But, you know, Florida State got that key stop. They're driving down. And at that point, it was pretty obvious Florida State was going to win this game, either just running it down Louisville's throat and scoring a touchdown or setting up an easy field goal and kicking it and winning. But they found a way to lose, and they keep finding ways to lose. And that's a sign of culture not being quite right. Because what that means is players are not doing their job, are not taking care of their business on each individual play. Somebody will get out of place, or somebody will do something when the game is on the line. They'll try to improvise, you know, whether that's Blackmon trying to pull the ball, or they'll do something that's outside the bounds of what they're being asked to do, and that leads to calamity, and then you find a way to lose. And that comes when you've got bad culture. That's the stuff that needs to be fixed. That's the first step to getting the inches back. So, yeah. A couple other things that are worth discussing. One is the RPOs in this game. I thought it was worth noting that there were some more. I mean, Fisher runs plenty of RPOs, despite lots of media and fans constantly carping about not running enough RPOs, partly because people think RPO means read option, which it doesn't. And, you know, you see this all the time. If you follow the Twitter feeds of people covering Florida State or fans of Florida State, if you follow these people on Twitter, every time you see a quarterback run, you'll see, oh, an RPO. No, that was not an RPO. That was either a run pass, or that was either a read option or just a design run, not an RPO. But, you know, people latch onto this terminology and they use it all the time, even though they don't know what it means, apparently. But Florida State did run quite a few RPOs in this game, and a few that they don't run as often. What I found interesting is that this was a game where they really didn't need him. What they really should have done is just pounded the football in each of those cases and taken away the pass option. They had an outside zone with a slant call that was a more obvious RPO than some of the other slant RPOs that they've done in the past. And it didn't work, almost got intercepted. And then, of course, everybody screams and whines about why didn't they just run it? Well, you know, you've been asking for RPOs for how long? And now they run it, and then you get that? Well, you know, don't judge by outcomes. You asked for it. To me, I also hear a lot of continued carping about play calling. Play calling is pretty good in this game. They gave Blackmon and that offense every opportunity to succeed in terms of play calling. Now, the pace was still too slow. The game management decisions of not going for it in a couple cases were poor. But those aren't play calling decisions. The one play call that I had a real problem with was on the 3rd and 3. Where they were running the ball with some success, and then they called an RPO. And I know some watchers of Florida State have said, oh, I don't think that was an RPO. It was an RPO. Check with your sources. That was an RPO on 3rd and 3. And what they did is they RPO'd it where Blackmon is reading the backside while he has a chance to hand it on outside zone to Cam Akers. And actually, if he'd have just handed it to Akers might have scored on the play. But he's got the opportunity to pull that out and throw to Auden Tate in the flat. He's reading whether the flat defender takes off with Tate or comes off the edge. And if he comes off the edge, you pull it and you throw it. If he doesn't, you hand it off. Well, he pulled it. Akers tried locking down on that one too, by the way. It was a little bit of a clumsy pull. And then he threw an incompletion that was very nearly a pick six. And so instead of getting a first down on 3rd and 3, wind up 4th and 3. The right call there would have been to just hand the ball off to Akers. And if he doesn't get the first down, you're probably in what? 4th and 2, 4th and 1, 4th and inches. And then you go for it on 4th down. And you more than likely get it. You're probably about 75 or 80% at least getting it because of how you've been able to win up front. And then you go down and score. Instead of being in a position where you miss it on 4th and 3 with that RPO call, and then try a 40-plus yard field goal and miss. Now, even if they'd hit the field goal, it would have been the wrong call. See, the right call is to put yourself in a position where you've got a 4th and 1 so that you can go for it, or you just get it on third down. That's where that play calling makes a difference. That's where that game management decision makes a difference in how you call it. Something that, you know, again, look at Paul Johnson at Georgia Tech as an example of that. He'll go, you know, they run the football all the time on third and five, third and three, because they know that if it gets down to fourth and one, they're going for it. And they're probably going to get it because they run the football all the time and they get 1 yard all the time. So that was one thing that I wanted to look at. Another thing in this game, I still am just bumfuzzled. I'm baffled at how on the last drive of the game, when Louisville is trying to get into field goal range, how in the world do you let Lamar Jackson pull the ball and get to the edge without anybody there? It's unreal. I mean, that typifies what has been the matter with so much in terms of situational play and in terms of busting assignments and so on. You had two guys tackle the running back and nobody tackle the Heisman Trophy winning quarterback. Nobody tackle the most dangerous offensive player in the country. You had nobody decide, you know what, I should hit him. Listen, on that play, as far as I'm concerned, have two guys hit Lamar Jackson. And if the running back happens to break through the line of scrimmage and score, fine. Lamar Jackson didn't beat me. That's the guy I can't let beat me. And you're going to let him carry the football on the last drive. You're going to let him be the one to make the big play to get you into, to get them deep into field goal range on the last drive. Really? And again, it's one of those things where somehow one of the players either didn't understand his assignment, which that comes back to a teaching issue and comes back to making sure guys are adequately prepared and understand what they're doing, or decided to freelance and decided to not to do his job, but go, you know what, I'm going to tackle that running back because it sure looks like he has the ball. Even though I'm responsible for him, I think he has the ball and I'm going to tackle him. Forgetting that Lamar Jackson is a wizard when it comes to pulling the football on the read option. You may think he has it, but Jackson still can pull it. Can and did. You cannot lose your assignment simply because, well, I'm confident he has it. I see him with it. No, Jackson can still pull it. Hit the quarterback. That's your responsibility. It's that stuff. Those are the inches, those are the details that Fisher's talking about when he's talking in these press conferences. And I know, you know, there's fans out there and there's media out there that are calling for Jimbo Fisher to come in and say, you know, where we are, this is just unacceptable. Florida State, I know we demand more than this and we have not lived up to expectations and so on. And to really just rip his team and do all that. Listen, he's basically explained that, listen, everybody's hurt. We've not achieved our goals. We're not where we've wanted to be. You know, we're just inches away, and we just need to get those inches. We need to continue to fight. And he's trying to send messages to his team and say, listen, you look at the beginning of his tape. He says, you know, there are things that are really good and things that are not good at key moments. That's how he opened his presser this week. And he says, you know, you've got to meet the challenge of the moment whenever it was, those key moments, those key situations and things we've always been able to do. We have to learn to continue to do that. He says, you have to use it. It eats us up. It makes coaches feel awful. We as players feel awful. We as an organization feel awful, just like the fans do. There's no problem with that. I understand that. He's saying, listen, we haven't lived up to expectations. That's what he's saying. But then he's also trying to coach and say, here's the reason we haven't lived up to expectations, because we're leaving these details, these inches undone. And he's right about that. You cannot decide to do something other than your assignment simply because you think that that's going there. I mean, I've told some of my players in the past, don't think, just do what you're told. Don't think, you know, well, but I thought he was, you know, I know you told me to, but I thought he was, don't think. Don't think about that. Do the read that I showed you to do. Don't try to process beyond that. Don't establish, but I thought he had the ball. That doesn't matter. Your job isn't to tackle him. Even if he has the ball, your job is to hit and tackle him, even if he doesn't. Don't think that he has the ball. Tackle him, even if he doesn't. That's the stuff that they need to get fixed. And, you know, again, I think Fisher's right when he says these are players that are trying to win instead of doing their job. Oh, I can tackle him, and then it's going to be, oh, and then he doesn't have the ball. No, do your job and hope that your other teammate is actually going to tackle him if he does have the ball. You got to trust. So that's where things are with that. Now, there are still some discouraging things in, you know, in terms of what Fisher has said. You know, when he talked about Petrino making the wrong call going forward on fourth down there. No, that was the right call because Louisville could have put the game away. It's the right call. And I also tend to believe that there is some sort of sports karma there where when you do go for it and you make the right call there, sometimes you get rewarded, and they did get rewarded. But, yeah, I think, you know, I also saw something a little discouraging in terms of the press conference this week where he brought up tempo. You can tell he's been hearing a lot of this stuff again. And, you know, going back to years ago, I mean, he heard some of that even from me. He answered, he said, you know, and he was talking about developing James Blackman. And he said, you know, you have to understand it's not always what you want to do. It's what you can do and where they are in their development. And that allows them to make certain plays, and you got to pick your moments to do things. And as they grow, it's going to expand out there. You know what I mean? There's a lot of things. If we go no huddle, how many? Now increase it to 90 plays, and he has to make 90 decisions instead of 60. So right there, he's saying, well, you know, here's the problem. We got a young quarterback. We're trying to protect him. We don't want him to have to make 90 decisions in a game. We want him to make 60 because right now we're not sure we trust him with 90. Here's the thing. If you only go 60, then every decision is worth more than if you go 90. You give him the chance to maybe make a mistake and be able to come back from it with 90 plays. Because each decision is worth one third more at 60 than it is at 90. So I think that's exactly the wrong approach. And play to your talent. You got other talent around him. Use that talent. And the thing is, just because you have more decisions doesn't mean they're more difficult decisions. And Fisher knows this. If you run the same plays over those 90 decisions that you would over 60, and you don't expand the number of calls, you just run them over and over again, it's not actually more difficult. And actually, tempo can sometimes make it easier because teams can't get their complex blitz calls or exotic looks in, so you face a more simplified defense. So that was a little discouraging to hear that. But again, I think a lot of this stuff right now, people asking for certain stuff to get fixed in season. I don't think a whole lot of things are necessarily easy to fix in season. You need to get to be able to prepare and do some things a little differently in the postseason once you've done your self-scout. Okay, well, given all that, I don't really want to belabor the Louisville game any more than I have. There are a number of questions to get to at this point from social media and so on. Want to address a lot of those. So first question has to do with, this is from SlickMick8095 on Twitter. Given the new early signing period, when do you think Jimbo will look to bring in new assistant coaches? I don't think there's much option. He's going to bring in new assistant coaches. The ones that he's going to bring in, he'll bring in after the bowl. I mean, thing is, he's going to be hiring coaches from teams that are in bowls anyway. So it's not like you can bring in new assistant coaches before all that happens. These coaches are going to coach in bowl games, and they'll then pick up and they'll be hired by Florida State after the bowls. That's just the way this is going to work. So anybody who's expecting changes to be made in terms of new hires and all that, that stuff's not going to happen until after the bowl game, people. Don't get impatient. Things are going to happen. Again, Fisher's made some phone calls already. He made phone calls weeks ago. things are going, you know, there's going to be some changes that are going to be made. And, you know, that's that. Again, those of you who listen to this show know I don't like to speculate on coaches' jobs and all that much. That's just not something I'm big on. I will say that, you know, when it comes down to some of the rumors out there, you know, lots of people throwing lots of different names out there, from Tosh Lupoi at Alabama as the next defensive coordinator at Florida State. Listen, when it comes down to it, if I'm going to bet on any name, so we all know that there's going to be one change no matter what, because there's going to be a 10th assistant hired. Now, there are going to be other changes. I can tell you that. There are going to be other changes. And there are going to be several other changes. But one thing I'm pretty comfortable speculating on right now is that there will be a defensive hire made for next year. And it's significant to note who that defensive hire is likely to be. And all you have to do is think about it for a second. Jimbo Fisher, last time he had to make a key hire in an offseason like this, where, you know, he's bringing in new blood from outside and all that, where's he going to look on the defensive side? First place he's going to look is to the Nick Saban tree. The last time he hired a somewhat green, but, you know, had a really good reputation in the coaching community, defensive backs coach for Alabama, and it worked out pretty well with Jeremy Pruitt for one season. He's also coached with, he also has a lot of respect for Mark Stoops, particularly as a defensive backs coach, and it's worth noting that the further away Florida State's gotten from Stoops' coaching in the secondary, the more there have been some technique issues and so on that have been noticeable in the secondary. So that said, you know, an ideal person for to fill one of the gaps that's going to be there on the defensive side would be someone who's a defensive backs guy, preferably from the Saban tree, and you know, maybe somebody who's worked with Mark Stoops. As it turns out, there's a guy who's done both. Right now, Alabama's defensive backs coach Derek Ansley is a guy who's been there for a couple years under Saban. And he happens to have worked multiple years under Mark Stoops at Kentucky. Fills a lot of other gaps that Fisher will be looking for. I'd put a lot of money right now on Derek Ansley being on the Florida State staff next year, just for what it's worth. Now, again, we'll see what other changes get made and all that. And I'm not big on speculating and stirring stuff up until after certain other decisions are made. These are people's livelihoods and so on. But I would put pretty good money on Derek Ansley being a major target that Jimbo Fisher would pursue for the Florida State staff for next year. That's one name I'm comfortable saying I think would be very high on the list. Just read the tea leaves, folks. All right, next question. Oh, wow. So there was a fan rant by a post. There's a fan rant post on Tomahawk Nation by a fan that I got several questions about, where this fan basically is writing, as he admits, emotionally, and he says, you know, trying to be objective at the same point. He basically says, so his argument is basically, Jimbo Fisher took the reins of a perennial powerhouse from a living legend. Bobby Bowden was an innovator who basically invented the spread with the fast break offense and revolutionized defense with an extreme emphasis on speed. Okay. So, and then he says, I thought it was Fisher's goal to bring FSU back to prominence, and with wholesale changes made from top to bottom, facilities improved, top ranking recruiting classes rolling in, I was convinced. And then he says, well, basically, Fisher's whole offense or whole philosophy is and always will be at odds with what FSU was built to be. And number one, he says he's gone away from the Bobby Bowden philosophy in terms of how to run offense. He's never kept a good, you know, he runs this Frankenstein super complex multiple hybrid power rushing ball control offense with a spread scheme offensive line. there's so much wrong in this article. So I was asked, you know, what do you think about this? I hardly want to give this any more time, because that right there, as soon as you say Frankenstein super complex multiple hybrid power rushing ball control offense with the spread scheme offensive line, you're telling me that you don't know anything about what Fisher's doing. He also explains that Fisher was trying to get, you know, Fisher was saying to, you know, not really interested in speed. He just wants size. No. First of all, okay, a couple things. One, Florida State runs, the Florida State's base rush running game approach up front is a zone running scheme. You know what Alabama's base is? Zone running scheme, people. Alabama runs inside-outside zone as their bases. That's their base run package. Same thing Florida State does. The idea that FSU runs some soft spread scheme on the offensive line, not the case. They run a basic zone as their core. And then they run some gap and counter concepts. Some power O, which is gap blocking, and some counter concepts, which is gap blocking. They run some of those too. They've run more and more of those in the last couple of years. But they run the same basic stuff up front that Alabama does and that every other major team does. Most of the NFL runs nearly all of the NFL bases out of zone up front. That's how it works. This idea that Fisher wants size over speed. Not the case. Listen, I talked to these guys when they first took over. What they wanted was speed and size. And if you have to sacrifice, you give up the size so that you can make sure that you keep speed. But what you really want is you want to get size and speed. And once you get to where the program can get those again, then you get those. And that's what they're getting. And this idea that, you know, Fisher's playbook is so complicated and it's way more complicated than NFL teams. No, no, no. Yes, the playbook is big, but what they're actually running is not all that complicated. Now, up front, in terms of number of protections and things, they've got more than the norm in college football. In terms of the pass concepts and so on, they've been running a high school offense this season with James Blackman. It's not hard. Same stuff. It's the same stuff. I run some stuff that in for my high school team. I run some stuff that's more complicated than anything Fisher's run with Blackman in terms of what it's requiring from the quarterback. Or right around the same. Now, again, you've got more protections. You've got some more stuff that you have to deal with. And yeah, every time the quarterback comes to the line of scrimmage, he's got a checklist that he has to go through. You've got to check your front. You got to make sure you get the protection call. You got to make sure you check your coverage. You check where the Mike linebacker is. All of that stuff is routine. That's not that hard. Anyway. And by the way, you go to a zone read type offense with RPOs built in all over the place, which I run, and there's a lot of decisions you have to make at the line of scrimmage on those too. This is why, you know, guys like Cam Newton are like, you know, people saying, oh, we didn't have to make decisions. I had to make decisions too, he said, when he was coming out of Auburn. I had to make quick decisions because I had to come in. I had to identify the front. I had to make sure that I read this player at the line of scrimmage. I might pull it and run. I might pull it and throw. There were other, it's just different. The complexity is a little different. Anyway, don't even read the article. It's garbage. Complete garbage. But I was asked by multiple people to address it. And yeah. Okay, next piece from social media. I know that the head coach is an egotistical freak who thinks his innovated offense is unstoppable if executed properly. He is not concerned one bit about fielding respectable defense. Doesn't matter how many times he's forced to hire a defensive coordinator or how many top-notch defensive coordinators he's made to hire. Proof has been in the pudding. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. That I got mixed up. That's not about Florida State. That's something that was sent to me about North Carolina. I know that Larry Fedora is an egotistical freak who thinks his innovated offense is unstoppable if executed properly, and he refuses to hire people other than his friends. And so, okay, yeah, that never mind. Just goes to show how close, you know, how fans so quickly wind up coming to the same conclusions, even though there may not be a whole lot of evidence for certain things. But whatever, it's amazing how similar the stuff that I get from the UNC side and from the Florida State side is on each one. All right, next question is from Royce Thompson on Twitter. Question for the podcast. Do you see Fisher handing over play calling in 2018? If not, when? He mentioned this in his 10-year plan. Okay, well, number one, and I got a couple questions this week about play calling. Number one is Fisher doesn't make all the play calls now. He's delegated a lot of the play calling. He delegated a lot of that last year. Randy Sanders calls a lot of the plays for Florida State. I mean, go back to the Miami game right before the call to Auden Tate to score on that last drive on the smash route, and watch the interaction between Fisher and Sanders on the sideline. Sanders is the one that makes a call, and then Fisher looks at him, and you see his eyes widen and go, "That's a great call." And then, you know, let's smash it, and then he calls it in from the phones. And last year, I mean, Sanders. I know for a fact that last year Sanders was calling full series, almost, you know, full quarters at times. So Fisher has delegated play calling quite a bit. I actually think that one of the reasons that Florida State's offense has slowed down so much particularly this year is because you don't just have one guy calling all the plays. You don't just have one, okay, this is what we're doing. I think there's too much discussion most likely going on the phones at different points as they're trying to make sure they get what's going to be most comfortable for Blackman and so on. So anyhow, I wouldn't be surprised. Again, there's going to be some changes made in the offseason. I wouldn't be surprised if Fisher, again, if the process of that delegation continues more significantly next year. Fisher will always have a hand in play calling. And he's going to always have, it's always going to be his offense. But it'll be interesting to see what he does in the offseason. Based on some info I've gotten, I wouldn't be surprised to see even more flexibility in that regard for next year. That said, Florida State fans shouldn't be asking for Fisher to give up play calling duties all that much. Because, again, as Mark Richt showed at Georgia, they really went in the tank after Richt gave up play calling responsibilities. Each year after that, with one exception, they declined. And, you know, it can make it much more difficult to sustain the kind of continuity that you want on offense once the head coach gives up that kind of responsibility. And Fisher is one of the best play callers in the game. I mean, you don't, if you have a Jimbo Fisher or a Bobby Petrino, or, you know, put Mark Richt in there, if you have one of those guys as your head coach, you want that guy calling most of the plays. Frankly, I'd prefer him calling pretty much all the plays. That said, I would want Fisher emphasizing to himself and philosophically trying to push the pace a little bit more in terms of how quickly things get in. But, yeah. Next question. What do you think about Kevin Scherer for Florida State defensive coordinator candidate? Well, right now, Florida State has a defensive coordinator. So I don't want to speculate on some of these things, although I think, you know, again, I'm not unaware of where things stand. But I don't think Kevin Scherer would be at the top of the list. I again think that when it comes to hiring defensive coaches, the one guy that I would bet on right now that Fisher would go after very hard and I would bet on to be on Florida State staff next year is Derek Ansley. I think he ticks off more boxes than Scherer does. Next question from Culture Change, or that is what? GoTag7 on Twitter. What are the chances we see LeBourne or White? I know at least one is keeping a red shirt. I don't know. You know, again, and I saw some surprise. I mean, this was followed up with you know, I'm surprised that we haven't seen LeBourne so far this year, and I don't know why anybody would be surprised. He didn't early enroll, and like I said on this podcast and also on social media earlier this year, if you want to know who's going to contribute early, look at the early enrollee list. It's really hard to contribute if you have not early enrolled, and that's true everywhere. You know, Florida State has gotten more out of freshmen at every position, including, you know, running back, wide receiver, wherever else. They've gotten more out of true freshmen than the norm. But even at Florida State, those players are it's hard to do if you haven't early enrolled. Next question was, okay, with a season like this, getting the young guys, especially wide receivers, reps will help achieve success next year and beyond, right? Well, again, that depends. That depends on a lot of things. So giving reps is not always a good thing. First of all, if the player's not ready to get the reps, then you're just reinforcing bad habits. So you can't put a guy out there if he's not getting things consistently right. And that's down to the details of how many steps on a particular thing or whatever, we're talking about wide receiver. The other thing is, are the players doing what's expected of them in practice and in terms of culture and all this other stuff? If not, you can't reward that. This goes back to Nooney last year when I was saying, you know, there's a reason that Nooney's not playing that much. And a lot of fans at that time were saying, just get him on the field. Well, you know what? Again, By this year, people were finally coming around to, well, you know, maybe there was a reason that he wasn't playing, because he's getting pretty frustrating now that he is. Well, that's the sort of thing that you're dealing with. So next thing, this one is from Jean Valjamis on Twitter. It says, let's see, would you say it's fair to assume that Jimbo is privately furious about how this season has gone and just won't let on to the public or media? Yeah, not just fair to assume. It's a fact. Fisher is so disappointed and so upset about where things are. And he just, listen, behind the scenes, it's well known. Behind the scenes, there's no question about this. But he can't be public with this. First of all, it negatively impacts anything else that you're trying to do in the season. Negatively impacts your recruiting. And it negatively impacts your ability to recruit and attract other potential prospects. If you are going to, you know, for example, perhaps make some changes, or you want to hire a 10th coach or whatever, you want to make sure that coach knows you're going to sell out and sell out for him. Huh? That's what you do. So listen, all this stuff is going to be dealt. All the things that need to be dealt with here, he's already going to be taking care of that stuff. But he's not going to tell the media, he's not going to tell the fans, here's what's on my mind right now. You can't do that. Now, what he does need to continue to do is preach the culture and the message that he needs the team to hear, which is, listen, fix the little tiny details that keep holding us back. And listen, little tiny details, one small thing is the difference between, you know, Clemson being 18 points from 7-5 last year or winning the national title. A few tiny little details in each game and you end up a national champion with some dominant wins as opposed to 7-5 and everybody talking about Clemsoning and wanting to fire that staff. That's where that goes. So that's where he is. But yes, it is absolutely true that he is not saying everything that he thinks, and nor can he, nor should he. Okay, next one is from Bertoli. It says, is our offense going to be able to score any more points moving forward? The defense will continue to take the heat from many of our fans, but our biggest problem is the offense. It's not scoring enough points, especially early in games, to apply any pressure whatsoever to our opponents. Blackman is doing great considering he's a true freshman, but he's having his share of true freshman moments, which is totally understandable. Patrick is out. Gavin is out. Campbell's still out, I assume. From what I can tell, there's no one on our roster that can step in at this point and provide the offensive production that these players did. So by my count, that leaves us with Akers, Tate, who's playing hurt, Nooney, and Izzo as the four players Blackman can rely upon for offensive production at this point. Yes, I know we have several players with plenty of talent and potential. Rasul, Ryan Green, DJ, Maven. But again, are there any of these guys realistically going to step in and replace anywhere close to the production we've lost? From my amateur eyes, our problems on offense don't seem very fixable at this point. We have a very limited number of weapons on offense, and Jimbo has to be very careful with JB, especially early in games. Good luck with this question. Yeah, that's a tough one. I do think that they will continue to improve what they're able to do offensively. But you're right that right now, in terms of personnel, in terms of what they've got, they don't have one guy they can hang their hat on aside from really Akers. they don't have a guy that can basically that they can say, okay, well, when it comes down to it, we got to go to that guy. Akers is becoming that, but he's not quite there. Tate would be that if he wasn't playing hurt. You'd love to see the tight ends do it, but the tight ends are really struggling in terms of, you know, Tate, Izzo's been pretty darn good, but you know, the lack of development from tight ends has been a problem. Think about that for a second in terms of who's popular and who's not among fans and so on. It's worth noting. But anyway, so yeah, I do think that they're going to be able to score more points going forward. They'll find ways to get there. But the problem is they've been really close to scoring points all season. It's not like they've been, you know, they've struggled to move the ball. They're averaging, you know, 6.97 and 6.11 yards per play the last 2 weeks. They averaged almost 6 yards a play against Miami. They've been moving the football, but they're little details, little minor things away from actually scoring on those drives. And it's just a matter of how quickly can you get it from being pretty good to the excellence that you need. That's the real question. And honestly, I don't have a good answer to that because I'm not in practice. I don't get to see whether or not players are actually going to get there. I do think that at this point, particularly with some of the NFL eligible guys, got some concerns because, you know, there's no goals left aside from getting the NFL. So you've got to persuade those guys to play for the NFL. It's a lot harder. I also, one last thing, I did see some discussion this week that, you know, Florida State's coaches on their staff, this is a bunch of guys that nobody wanted. Listen, within the last 2 years, Auburn tried to hire Charles Kelly away for over $1 million. That's within the last 2 years. This is not a long time ago. So the reality is not the case that, oh, they, you know, they've known that there have been issues for a long time and they've just sat because of loyalty. Jimbo just is so loyal. Listen, that guy will be cutthroat when it comes to winning and losing. But he's not going to evaluate just based on knee-jerk results. Now, right now, the fact that certain that when you do have a full cupboard and certain things are not getting done, yeah, that's those decisions get made. But let's not pretend that, you know, a large number of the coaches on this staff have not had opportunities to go elsewhere. Within the last 2 years, there have been, what, four or five coaches that have had the opportunity to go elsewhere? So, you know, the reality is that perception has overtaken everything in terms of this, and it has affected the way even that this staff is able to coach. And so changes are going to need to be made for that reason alone, even if there weren't other issues, and there were other issues before that. I mean, we've talked about those for a long time on this program. Boy, these episodes are getting longer as we get further into a very frustrating season for Florida State fans. Once again, just want to thank the sponsor of this show, Luis Marquez from Keller Williams in Jacksonville. Luis is the best at what he does. He will make sure that your house gets the best possible online presence. He'll make sure that you have a great marketing plan, and he'll outwork anybody in making sure that you get the best possible deal if you are buying a house as well. Give Lewis a call if you need any real estate done in the greater Jacksonville area. Tell him you heard about him from this show. Once again, this has been the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio. I'm your host, Jason Staples. Thanks for listening.
I made this.